Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump.
I love BJ's
fur circus.
Steven Ricker's testicles.
T-butted.
Boom, chicka, wow, wow.
No, no touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis.
Vitellary filipula.
Filipuli.
Filipalapala.
Wow, 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 wow.
Use your big boy words.
La, 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And we're back. It's another week of Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, IcemanManiacs.com. How you doing today, Michael Shockley?
I'm worried.
You're worried?
I am worried. I'm worried about your own well-being, your mental state.
Oh, yeah?
The state of your hindquarters, because your Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, we're going there.
Yeah. Your Toronto Maple Leafs, they lost 6-2 on Saturday.
To the Buffalo Sabres.
Buffalo, against the god-awful Buffalo Sabres.
I was really mad about that because all of their games have been blacked out because they've been on NHL Network, and they were finally on Saturday night, cooked dinner, had a big spiel going on, and then I watched that. I actually turned it off to turn on a different game. But not to be outdone.
Yeah, that wasn't it. Then they went out and outdid themselves. Tuesday night, they lost at home to the Nashville Predators by a score of 9-2. And it wasn't even that close. It was 8-0 at one point. And 9 goals allowed is the most the Leafs have given up at home since way back in 1991, which was so long ago that the Air Canada Centre didn't even exist. That was at the Maple Leaf Gardens.
Oh, yeah.
It's been that long.
Well, first thing I would say is Nashville Predators are a really good team.
Yes,
and there is no way in the world, no matter how bad my Maple Leafs are, that they would lose to the Washington Capitals 9-2. And the reason is because they're coached by Barry Trotz.
And a Barry Trotz team will never score 9 goals.
No, and they don't win very often either.
They don't score 9 goals in a week.
So I have no concerns about that. But yeah, there's my brother predicted last week that he was looking ahead at the schedule and saw a lot of losses on the schedule, a lot of tough games, and predicted in 2 weeks that Randy Carlyle would be fired. First of all, I'm not worried, not upset, because we're in a rebuild.
You didn't expect much.
No.
If you have low expectations, you're not disappointed.
Yes, it's part of the reason why my wife married who she did. But no, this is a rebuilding year. We wouldn't mind having our younger players get some experience. We wouldn't mind drafting in the top 5 this year. So I'm not that concerned about it at all. It is what it is. And one of my big frustrations is Nazem Kadri is a fantastic center, and he should be playing with fantastic wingers. And he was put on Kessel's line 2 weeks ago. We went on a 4-game, 5-game winning streak. And what happens? He gets taken off the top line. Why? Because we're winning. And that seems to be the modus operandi for Randy Carlyle, who likes to play his favorite players over what is best for the team. And this is the kind of things that happen. So, yep, not worried. Disappointed. Mm-hmm. But I was debating whether to head out to the Ford Center last night on Tuesday night to do the adult clinic with head coach Mullins and assistant coach Beaulieu. I'm like, oh, it's Toronto and Nashville, and I hemmed and hawed all day trying to decide, do I stay home and watch the game? Do I go out and skate? Decided to go out and skate. Best decision of the year.
Yeah. That worked out pretty well for you.
Yes, it did.
I'm sorry. Is it Beaulieu or Beaulieu?
It is officially Beaulieu, and you can ask his grandma.
Yeah.
So,
anyway. I guess enough of your Leafs blowing.
Yes.
So, since our last show.
Oh, yeah. Here, following right up on that.
Here locally, yeah. The Evansville Icemen are now below 500 at 4-5-1 after losing two more games over the weekend. The losing streak is now up to four games. Friday night at Elmira, the Icemen lost 4-2. Actually led 2-1 in that game after two periods on goals by Troy Rutkowski and Jarrett Lucan, but gave up three unanswered goals in the third period. And on Saturday, it wasn't much better. The Icemen lost 4-1, trailed 4-0 after two periods. Randy Cure ruined the shutout for the Jackals in the third period with his first professional goal. Also, Chris Dreiger started again in net, but Brandon Kamm made his pro debut in relief. He played the entire third period and stopped all four shots he faced. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Kamm get a little more time here coming up. Dreiger's save percentage, or Dreiger, however it's pronounced, is down to .877. And with him struggling a bit and the schedule getting a lot busier, I think as long as Cal Heater is out, at some point Brandon Kamm is going to have to get a start or two, and we may see one or two games in this next week or so.
One of the huge things that came out of Saturday night is the fact that the Maniac Insanity Advisory System was upgraded. Rick Llewellyn doing fantastic work once again. And due to the level of Facebook whining and dire predictions and everything else, the Insanity Advisory System went from elevated to high.
Yes.
So we are officially at a high Maniac Insanity Advisory System at this time.
Exactly. Worth noting, both goals in Friday's game were power play goals. The Iceman power play did go 2-for-8 on the road trip.
Which I said on the radio on Wednesday that the power play looked really good, even though it hadn't connected yet. So I was correct.
Despite that, it is still bottom five in the league at just 12.5% on the season. We have only scored four power play goals in the season, and we've given up three goals on the power play. We've given up three shorties. So we're only plus one differential on the power play.
That's a little ugly.
That's not good, yeah. The Iceman penalty kill also bottom five at just 77.8%. The good news there, if there is good news, is that the Iceman are the least penalized team in the league at just 10.5 penalty minutes per game. So at least, even though the PK is not very good, it's not being put to work very often. Silver lining, I guess. Also bottom five, the Icemen are bottom five in shots for per game at just 26.2 and shots allowed way up at 31.5. And for the fancy stats gurus, it's pretty bad when you don't take very many penalties, so you're not shorthanded that often, but you're still giving up a ton of shots. That's a sign of troubles at 5-on-5.
Yeah, and we talked about it in the preseason. We looked over the roster, and we both said one of our concerns, you want to talk about high expectations, I think we both had him finishing outside of first place. I predicted, or outside of the playoffs, I predicted fifth in the division.
I predicted fourth.
Okay.
I thought they would get in, but...
But the thing we both had concerns about was the defensive core.
Right.
And it's a work in progress, mm-hmm. and it's just going to take some time for them to figure it out. The other thing I would say is, one, Elmira is a difficult place to play. We need to accept that.
Yeah.
Even though that team was horrible in the first half of last year, that is a tough road trip to make. It is a tough building to play in. They got great fans out there. It is a real small, tight stadium, so the fans are right on top of you. It's a tough place to play. And the second thing is, it's not like the only three wins that Elmira has this year are against us.
Yeah.
They're a really good team.
They are, yes.
Now, Braden Irwin just got called up. He had 6 goals and 8 assists in 10 games.
Whew.
So he got called up to the Rochester Americans. So with him gone, we'll see if this team, this Elmira team, comes back. But they're 7-3-1.
Yeah.
So they're a fantastic club. And this is one of those teams that, as I looked through the – looking at rosters on paper in the preseason, I wasn't expecting much out of this Elmira team, but they put themselves a really good team. You can see the Buffalo Sabre influence working through this affiliation.
How so? Explain.
Well, just because the players that they got, they had the, you know, they did a lot of trades last year and everything else, and obviously Jacob Sulek is gone, Danny Hobbs is gone because that affiliation
right.
is all over with, but Buffalo has set them up with a bunch of players. And you know, some of these guys I hadn't even heard of before, but they are scoring like crazy. And
well, you know, the Sabres have had a lot of draft picks these last few years.
And a lot of high draft picks.
Yeah, so you got talent there in the pipeline.
When people complained about us going to Columbus 2 years ago, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Columbus hasn't won anything. Yeah, I know, and they've been drafting in the top five every year. That means there's a lot of young players to work through the system.
Yeah, exactly. And also, when a team is out of contention, that means they're going to continue to stockpile draft picks, and they're not going to be trading away prospects at the deadline because they're making a playoff push.
Well, and it also means that the NHL team will put players down in the AHL level for the playoff experience,
right,
which will push guys from the AHL down to your ECHL team.
Right. Very much so.
Very much so.
So, looking at the standings, even though the sky is falling, it is worth noting the Icemen are still just 1 point out of a playoff.
Oh, my God. It's because we only play 10 games.
Right.
I know.
Exactly.
Like everyone's freaking out and everything else. We're 1 point out.
Yeah. All you have to look at, you don't look at the whole league this year with the playoff format as it is now. You got to be in the top four in your 7-team division. That's what it boils down to. And right now, we're 1 point out of fourth.
One whole stinking point.
Yeah. We win
62
tonight.
62 games left.
We win tonight. We're back in the playoffs. It's as simple as that. It's way too early to be really looking at the standings and playoff positioning anyway. But my point is, it's way too early to be freaking out over this stuff. So
indeed.
Anyway, moving on.
We are moving on to Iceman transactions.
Yes, Jakub Sulek and Daniel Johnston still on the shelf. Both did not play over the weekend in Elmira. We are up to 33 confirmed man games lost due to injury. Maybe more. I'm only counting injuries that we know for sure exist. Some transactions of note. Saturday, the 15th, the Iceman signed a rookie forward named Tom Hartnett. Played 4 years of college hockey at Wesleyan University, which is NCAA Division III, and he was in camp with the Albany Devils in the AHL. Once he was signed, he was placed on reserve, and whenever he plays his first game as a member of the Icemen, it will be his pro debut.
Yep. Hopefully that's tonight, but we will wait and see.
We'll see. And then on Monday, the Icemen activated Dana Frazier from IR. He had gotten hurt during training camp and then immediately placed him on team suspension. No word on the story behind that. Hopefully we'll find something out soon.
If we care.
Yeah. But, you know, every time a player gets placed on team suspension, that elevates the insanity level.
Oh, I know. I saw somebody's like, if he doesn't want to play here, then he should just leave.
Yeah. Like, yeah, don't let the door hit you.
You don't even know what's going on.
Yeah. And speaking of players on team suspension, some new info from Coach Mullins. When he made his weekly appearance on ESPN 105.3 last week, I sent a couple questions in, and he kindly answered them on the air.
How about you?
You're
a professional.
I am.
You should get a job working in radio.
Yeah. When Cal Heater was placed on team suspension due to his KHL tryout, some folks were wondering if he would be welcomed back later or if the team suspension meant there was a rift there. So I asked Coach about that, and he said he is 100% welcome back if the KHL gig does not work out. He said, quote, I'll go pick him up, I'll fly him back, I'll carry him if I have to, end quote. He spoke very high of Cal and said that essentially losing a guy to the KHL is a risk when you sign someone with his talent.
Coach Mullen's very hard to play for, obviously doesn't get along with his players, treats him bad.
Yep. Also, we wondered what was up with Wes Myron being placed on team suspension, and I asked Mullen about that, and he said he was a great kid, but his heart just wasn't in it. He decided to move on in life. He has not signed in Europe or anywhere else. He's not on team suspension because he's pursuing hockey elsewhere. He's just decided he's not going to pursue hockey anymore. He decided it's not his thing and he doesn't want to do it anymore. And we've talked about that with Dirk Southern, and I'm sure we'll talk about it with other guys as time goes on. That's just sometimes how it is. It's not the glamour of the NHL. You're not making big money. It's a grind. And while there are a lot of positives, there are also a lot of negatives to this line of work. And sometimes guys just decide they don't want to do it anymore.
So translate that into maniac ease. He betrayed us. He flat out betrayed us.
What a loser.
He took our money and left us.
Yes. So in other news about Coach Mullins, you like you said, you went to the adult hockey class.
Yep.
And
Clinic
can you,
or whatever it
yeah,
was.
Whatever. Do you want to share any fun stories about that? How did it go?
It was really cool. There was probably about 20, 25 of us out there skating around, just doing some kind of simple drills. But one of those things where you come back to the basics of skating and strides and everything else. And I was noticing that the coaches that I've seen, you know, Coach Crom, and you could tell that he was a warrior on the board. So you would watch him in practice, and you would see the things that he would do with the puck along the boards, and you would just think, man, if I had to play against him, he had to have been so difficult on the boards. Jeff Pyle, you could tell that, you know, he had 40 goals in the IHL. You could tell, even in practice, that he was a sniper. You could tell that in his playing days, he could score. And with Coach Mullins, you can just see just a fluid, just a strength and power when it comes to the core, to the trunk when you're skating. He is so smooth. We were just doing a simple figure eight drill, and I could not do it. He made it look so simple. I've been skating since I was 3 years old, and he just has a lower body, bend the knees, power kind of thing. You can see why he played as long as he did, because he just efficient and powerful.
Cool.
So that was about it. The other thing is we played like this game. We tried to stay low, and we could only use our hands. We batted like a soccer ball around, played 3-on-3. We had Caden Patafi in one net and Josh Beaulieu in the other net. And first opportunity I get, Bill Nadeau was out there. First opportunity, I totally ran him right into the boards. So good fun.
He had it coming, right?
Yeah, we had the whole Red Dragons defense corps out there.
Wow. Yep. So you're going to turn things around now, right?
Well, I told him that we might have to kick in some extra bucks to Coach Mullins to see if
get him as a special assistant or something.
Yes, to work on our D-zone coverage, because it is pathetic. So, of course, part of our D-zone coverage issue is the fact that our defensemen don't like to come back to the D-zone.
Ah, yeah.
So that's, can't really work with D-zone coverage when guys don't come back.
Yeah, if you're not even in there, that's true. That's the Icemen have that leg up on you at least.
Yes.
At least their defensemen are in the D-zone when we have problems in the D-zone. Exactly. So are you going to were you angling to get yourself a gig with all these players on team suspension sooner or later?
No.
They're going to come calling, right?
That dream died last year when I did that commercial for iPhone Todd and Josh Beaulieu checked me. And he checked me for real, and I hurt. That was the end of that. Hmm. So, because if Josh hit me that hard in a commercial, I don't want to play. No. But anyways, for all the information, transactions, injury results, guys that betray us, and guys that flat out leave the team because they don't want to be here, and all the rest of the lies that get spread around on Iceman or on the Maniac Asylum Facebook page. For all that information, the facts actually, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, IcemanManiacs.com. Head on over to the Maniac message board on the website for the updated roster, IcemanManiacs.com.
All right. Now, as we shift away from facts,
yes,
we shift into Mad.
And we're moving away from satire as well. There was a lot of satire in that last segment.
Yes, yes. This is
a lot of sarcasm.
This is completely
a lot of tongue-in-cheek kind of talk about Mullins being hard on the players and guys leaving.
So, it's the new sensation that's sweeping Iceman Nation. It is mad speculation by the mad scientist, Dr. Dirty D. Again, 100% free of facts, because the truth hurts way more than making stuff up.
Exactly.
So 2 weeks ago, you diagnosed Peter Sakaris with a bad case of somnambulism.
That is correct, and he was healed of it and back into action.
Right. And last week, you revealed that Daniel Johnston is out due to gelatinous tubercles of purulent ossification.
Not quite cleared up yet.
No. Still wreaking havoc.
Yes.
Now, this week's case, defenseman Zach Sternberg took a regular shift in each of our first 8 games, but he did not play in either game at Elmira over the weekend. He could be a healthy scratch. Maybe. We don't know. I think we should think again. I think he's got something up, and I think you have the answer.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a blend of healthy scratch isn't quite the right term, but he's not exactly completely injured. So it's more of like a mental thing, kind of psychosomatic even,
but not quite
psychosomatic, but it's along that line between being in the doghouse, a healthy scratch, and kind of having just not feeling well, can't quite.
Needing some maintenance? Needing some me time?
Just not feeling good and just taking some time off to probably could play, but isn't quite playing. So, and that is actually, medically speaking, the term for that is officium defunctorum.
Really?
So he is. It's more of a mental kind of. It's like a concussion, but it's more like you didn't get your brain jiggled, so that's a concussion. This is more like your brain doesn't want you to go. So officium defunctorum. So hopefully we should see him, a quick return to the lineup for him.
So how will this be treated? Is this another antiseptic bloodbath?
No. The antiseptic bloodbath that worked great for the somnambulism, not quite as well for the gelatinous tubercles of purulent ossification. That's those are hanger-oners there.
Yeah, clearly that's not working quite as well so far. So,
no, this is going to take some stereotaxic atrocities.
Really?
Yes, stereotaxic atrocities need to be applied to his mental condition so that we can clear up the officium defunctorum.
Hmm.
There you go.
This is... I just feel enlightened every time we do this segment. Exactly. I feel like
and you're
I'm,
also like making sure you wash your hands after you go to the bathroom every time. Too.
Yeah, you don't want to get any of these things.
No, no.
I'm still worried about the gelatinous tubercles.
Yeah, if that begins to spread through the Evansville area, that could be nasty.
Yeah, you hook up with the wrong lady on Fairs Avenue.
Indeed. Oh, well. I already ratted this one out.
Yeah.
This is why I preview things.
Yeah, this is why you read the script before we start the show.
The Maniac fan base insanity level, as I talked about, we got an upgrade there, but maybe not everyone's seen it yet because hopefully sane people don't even go on Facebook
that's true.
And check out the fan site. But talk a little bit about this fan base insanity level.
So yeah, late last week, Photoshop guru Rick Llewellyn sent me a message on Facebook. He said he had an idea that he needed some help with. Well, I'm always down with helping people with ideas because I'm helpful like that. He said that on the...
And you got to know that if Rick Llewellyn's asking you for help for an idea, it's going to be
classic. It's going to be good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've collaborated on a lot of the Steven Ricker tater nonsense. And
I was just telling the story about the Evansville Thoroughbreds just the other day. April Fool's Day joke. Oh, boy. That was probably the highlight of that job last year, was being in that office, watching that lady screaming about the league should suspend that guy or whatever. Oh, it was fantastic. Anyways.
Beautiful. So on the Maniac Asylum cover art that he made last week that showed the caption was like, where sane people come to calmly talk about hockey or whatever.
I loved it. Brad
the
Perkins,
yoga on the beach. And
with Brad Perkins' Space Ace face.
Right, exactly. So he wanted to add something to the corner of that where we would have a color level describing the current mentality of the fan base, like the terror threat levels. But he said he needed some, quote, shocker-esque descriptions of each threat level, end quote. So I sent him some ideas, and this is what we ended up coming up with. The Maniac Insanity Advisory System, that's trademarked, fan base insanity levels are as follows. Green or low equals rainbows and puppy dogs. And this is a theoretical level. It's never been issued. Probably never will be.
See, and I was going to talk. That was the one concern I had about this, because I thought Drew Campbell a few years ago had coined the phrase rainbows and unicorns, but I wasn't 100% certain.
Well,
that
see,
went back to the CHL team.
I believe that phrase has been used before, and it's not just a soupy thing. That's a rainbows and unicorns is a fairly common phrase.
No.
However,
no,
we
Drew
are
made it up.
We are not
Drew made it up.
But it's on the blacklist now. We're not allowed to mention unicorns, because if we mention unicorns, Patrick McBrien gets too excited.
Oh, that's true.
So now it's rainbows and puppy dogs.
Gotcha.
So the next level is blue or guarded, and the explanation for that is, for the love of God, hide the children.
Yes, indeed.
Then we have yellow or elevated, which is where things started at when Rick first posted this. And that is getting cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs around here. Next up is orange or high, which again is our current status. And that is nuttier than a squirrel's winter stash. And then the last and most prominent, and going forward will probably be the most common, level of fan
Even
insanity.
Even if we are above 500 and in the playoffs.
Right. Is red or severe, and that means this is absolutely, totally effing bat shoop crazy.
Nice. Don't even need engineering sounds.
Right, exactly. I can censor myself. So so where do you think we are right now? Do you agree with Rick's current assessment that we're at high
and I think it's just
or nuttier than a squirrel's winter stash?
It's an amazing concept that when I saw it, I went crazy and started calling people and telling them about it and everything else. But it is true that you can just take a slice of the Facebook, the Maniacs Asylum on Facebook, and then talk to a few friends and everything else, and you can get a gauge of what the fan base is like. Mm-hmm. And it was getting a little crazy with, we talked about it on the show last week, with Kevin Ziegler and Ryan Huff just going crazy. And this was, they were going crazy. We were 3-1-1 at the time. We had lost our first regulation game, and they were going crazy. But yeah, you kind of just take the pulse of the Asylum and a few of the others, and you can get a threat level. So, and you just know that if you're at a threat level orange or red and you post often in the Asylum, I'm probably not going to say hi to you at the game. Just because I'm just afraid that you're just going to like rip my head off and suck my eyeballs out of it and drink your beer, $8.50 beer out of my skull or something, and then stick it on top of Kyle Frenette's effing nachos. So
there is a mental image. Everyone rewind that and just listen to that and just listen to it phrase by phrase and picture it in your head.
Kyle Frenette and just trying to grab his nachos out from my sightless skull. There we go.
Yeah.
Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week.
All right, this is a song I never played at Swander because it's less than a year old. But if I were still doing the music, I would totally play it sarcastically in the right situations. So I think it's a perfect time to play it. In honor of those who think the season is over, this is from the Lego Movie. It's Tegan and Sarah with The Lonely Island. Yes, Aaron Miller, I can play a song featuring The Lonely Island on this show. It's Everything is Awesome!
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream. Everything is better when we stick together. Side by side, you and I, gonna win forever. Let's party forever. We're the same, I'm like you, you're like me. We're all working.
Than an awesome possum. Rip my body in chocolate frosting. 3 years later, I shot the frosting. Smelling like a blossom. Everything is awesome.
Stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. Awesome to win, and it's awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose.
Everything is better when we stick together. Side by side, you and I.
We are back around the ECHL with Iceman Insights. Shocker. Benigni.
Benigni?
I know. I totally screwed that up.
Benigni. The dirty D.
It's Shocker. Dirty D, 96.9, WYIR, The Wired. Around the ECHL.
Couple things of note from around the league. Friday night in Toledo, the Walleye and our beloved Fort Wayne Comets.
Oh, suck.
Played quite the whistle fest. Toledo won that game 6-2. There were a total of 61 penalty minutes in that game, which is not an inordinately high number. But there was just one major and two misconducts. In that game, there were a total of 19 power plays. The Walleye went 4 for 10. The Comets went 2 for 9. And even with six power plays ending early due to goals, the game had just 30 minutes and 24 seconds of 5-on-5 hockey.
You must have loved that. And then your goal to get overtime to be like 1-on-1 with no goals in the net.
Yeah. And for those who have not been paying very close attention to the standings, those two teams are looking like two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. The Comets are now 10-2, first in the division and first in the Eastern Conference, and the Walleye are 8-2-1, which is second in the division and third in the conference. So that's a couple of good teams, and I think from what we've seen so far, it looks like they may be sticking toward the top of the standings for the duration.
Yeah, that Fort Wayne Comet Club, if you're not going to be affiliated, you do the next best thing and gobble up good players that are off of their affiliation three-year deals and that are cast-free,
yeah.
Namely Paul Crowder. Paul Crowder, part of that San Antonio AHL deal, played in Cincinnati, and then he came up, and Cincinnati didn't want to keep him, and he was done with his AHL contract, so Fort Wayne scoops him up, and
yeah.
He's a fantastic hockey player.
I want to say they did end up signing an affiliation deal like late in the offseason, but I don't think they've gotten much out of it.
They might have.
Elsewhere, catching up with some former Icemen, Florida Everblades. They are hot. They've won 8 of their last 9, and Alan York has won his last 6 starts in net for them. His goals against average is down to 209, and it is up to 4th in the ECHL. But not faring so well in net. Mike Clemente for the Missouri Mavericks is just 2-4 with a 313 goals against and an 893 save percentage. And our old friend Rob Medore with the Cincinnati Cyclones is 2-2-2, which isn't a terrible record, but just a 342 goals against and an 870 save percentage, which is not very Medore-like based on what we've seen out of him in recent years.
No, but that, like I was saying, that Cincinnati team had a lot of turnover from last year's championship run. So I expect Medore to come back. I expect Clemente to come back once both of those teams adjust to personnel that they have.
Gotcha.
Is that Jake Obermeyer in Mizzou?
Is that where Jake Obermeyer plays? up front, Adam Pleskatch is tied for the league lead with 10 goals. For those who don't remember that name, he had 8 points in 10 games with the Icemen at the end of our first ECHL season under Rich Crum. The following season, Jeff Pyle did not bring him back. He went and signed with the Tulsa Oilers. Is that where Jake Obermeyer plays?
Is that where Jake Obermeyer plays?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. He played with the Tulsa Oilers in the CHL last year in his first full professional season, had 59 points in 61 games, and so far with Tulsa this year in the ECHL, he's got 14 points in 10 games. That kid is the real deal, and it makes you wonder what could have been if we managed to keep him around, because he's certainly been a diamond in the rough for the Oilers.
Yep, I brought the insanity level down a notch.
Yeah. Also among the top 20 in ECHL scoring are Dylan Clark, who has 14 points in 13 games with Rapid City, and Wade McLeod,
the Highlander,
who has 13 points in 14 games with the Idaho Steelheads.
Not to mention Mike Seidel from Elmira Jackals, goal and 5 assists, as well as Rob Florentino. I think he had a scrap Friday or Saturday
with
night
Matt Lowry.
Yep, against former. They were in training camp together last year.
Indeed.
Skating down memory lane, inspired by Johnny Kells.
Yes, this is when we reminisce about great moments and some not-so-great moments in Iceman history. This is a great moment. The date, January 6th, 2012, which was our second CHL season. This is in honor of, quote, Iceman legend, end quote, Josh Beaulieu. That's what the press release called him. Since he is having his number retired tonight, I wanted to feature him in this segment, but we've already used him scoring the first goal in the history of the Ford Center.
Yep.
And we've used the night of his gruesome wrist injury, which was when we had that 21-round shootout. So I had to dig in a little deeper and find another Beaulieu night to feature. On January 6, 2012, the Iceman beat the Bloomington Blaze 6-2 in Bloomington, and Mr. Beaulieu had two goals, an assist, and a fight, and was the number one star of the game that night. That was his only Gordie Howe hat trick in three seasons with the Iceman, and it was also the only Gordie Howe hat trick recorded by an Iceman player during that entire season. And it was actually fairly rare in general for him to fight. He had three fights during his first season with the Iceman, all on the road, and did not have a single scrap during his second or third seasons with the team. So only had three fights, but one of them he turned into a Gordie. So, yeah, that's pretty memorable, I guess. We didn't get to see it, but still, that's a noteworthy night to skate down and recall.
And it should be a fantastic night tonight at the Ford Center. I know he's got a lot of family that has come in for this and just kind of interested to see what the banner looks like and where it's getting put up. Are they going to cover up the Canadian flag with it? Are they going to put it to the side? But it'll be pretty neat to have something of the Iceman up in that Ford Center. And
hopefully.
Go to the game early. I know a secret. Don't miss warm-ups. That's all I can say.
Is the whole team going to wear number 20?
Yeah.
I was just guessing.
Yep. So
the whole team of Beaulieus.
That's right. Boy, wouldn't that be a beauty there?
Oh, man.
We wouldn't have any defensive zone lapses that way.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyways.
But that would be fun to call, though, wouldn't it? Yep. And Beaulieu passes it to Beaulieu, who converts to Beaulieu.
The other thing I was going to ask is, what's the over-under on Kevin Harvey's Gordie Howe hat tricks for the season? Are we going to put him at like 15 or 20?
Well, so he's only got two fights so far.
Yeah, but one of them he's got a Gordie Howe hat trick from against Wheeling on that Friday night, I believe.
Did he?
I think so.
I think he ended up in a goal or an assist short or something.
I know that I don't think one of the Wheeling players had a Gordie Howe hat trick. So
yeah.
So I thought Harvey had one too that night, but I still put him around 12.
12 Gordies in one season?
Yep, I think so.
Wow.
He's got the ability.
You have low standards.
Hockey 101.
All right, helping Iceman fans do and old alike understand the game a little bit better. This is actually something from an NHL game. Last Thursday in St. Louis, the Blues hosted the Predators, and I was watching on FSN when something pretty unusual happened in the first period of that game. Blues defenseman Carl Gunnarsson, a former Toronto Maple Leaf.
He just wanted out, and if he doesn't want to play for the Leafs, then
screw him.
Let the door hit him.
Yeah. He took a shot from the point, and it appeared to go off the post and crossbar and then out. The referee signaled no goal. The goal judge did not turn the light on. Nobody really thought it was a goal, so play continued. But the next whistle was a minute 47 seconds later, and at that whistle, the video review room, in conjunction with the war room in Toronto, contacted the on-ice officials and initiated a review of the Gunnarsson shot. The replay then revealed that the shot went off the post first, but then not off of the crossbar. The second bounce was actually off of the camera that was mounted inside the net. The overhead replay showed that the puck did fully cross the goal line, so it was a good goal. The clock was then reset from 5:28 left in the period to 7:15 left in the period, because when it happened, there were 7:15 on the clock. So it's as if that minute 47-second span never even happened. And this is the Hockey 101 part of it for those who don't know how this works. In that span, after the goal that was not called a goal initially, if Nashville had scored, that goal would have been wiped off of the scoreboard.
Yep.
It would have been as if it never happened, just like the rest of it. Players were not credited with time on ice. Goalies weren't credited with saves. Players weren't credited with shots. None of that counts. And
penalties,
if
I believe, still count.
I'm not sure. Probably, yeah.
Well, that would be a stoppage of play anyways. So
that's true, yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of an unusual thing. You don't see it very often in the NHL, and the exact same scenario could not happen in the ECHL because there's no video review.
However,
the referee can talk to the linesman and the goal judge at the next stoppage of play if a potential goal is in question, and the no goal can be overturned and then declared a goal after the referee talks to the linesman and the goal judge. But whether via video review or discussion with the fellow officials, the call must be changed at the next stoppage of play.
Yep.
If play then resumes again, that's it. It's set in stone. It's like in football when you can only challenge at that stoppage of play. Once the ball is snapped, you can't challenge. And it's kind of the same thing with the review system. It has to be reviewed at the next stoppage. Otherwise, if they end up figuring out later that it should have been a goal, tough.
Yep. Wouldn't it be awesome if a team was shorthanded due to a major penalty? So when a goal is scored, the player doesn't come out of the box. He's got to serve the full 5 minutes of the major. Mm-hmm. And you have a situation like this where they say no goal, and a minute 47 gets played,
yeah.
And then they go back and realize it is a goal,
yeah.
And then they put the time
back.
You have
to end up killing 7 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be rough.
Yeah. So that would be a bizarre situation. So, yep, just one of those things. Actually, reading that in the USA rulebook just today, as a matter of
really?
Fact. Really? Yep. So it is a rare situation, but, yep, you set the time all back.
Yep.
Real men of genius.
All right, before we do this, I want to clarify something. I've had some questions from folks asking why we haven't done a new Rap Masterpiece Theater with Stephen Rickard lately.
It's because Stephen Rickard doesn't want to do it anymore. And what we told him was, well, if you're not going to be a part of this team, then let the door hit you in your tater
your,
behind.
Your Kentucky
yeah.
Keister.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, we have done 5 Rap Masterpiece Theaters, which you can get on IcemanManiacs.com, and we will be doing more of them in the future. We just haven't done one lately because
Stephen Rickard, very difficult to work with in the studio.
Yeah,
he is the Dwight Mullins of amusement park radio.
You're saying he's thick in the trunk.
Yeah. I did say that earlier. I was kind of hoping that got on the intro.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Yeah. Stephen... With the Rap Masterpiece Theater, what happens is I from a list of suggestions and a list of songs that I just want to hear him do, I basically send him a song and say, I want to do this for Rap Masterpiece Theater. And then he takes it and runs with it. And he spends, I don't know how much time, but all of the production, you know, the intro and outro we did, but the production of the rap itself is all on Steven. And it's just a matter of, it's a lot of fun, but I don't want it to become a job for him, and I don't think he would have fun with it if we were asking him to churn one out every single week. So that's just why we haven't. We'll do them from time to time, but it's not going to be a weekly thing, especially when we're doing weekly shows, because I just don't want to take advantage of his generosity in doing them. But yes, he's very difficult to work with.
So, yeah, let me translate into maniac-ese. Stephen Rickard is basically the Nathan Moon of
right.
the amusement park.
Right. What do you call Stephen Rickard on a stick?
I don't Taterville?
A douche kebab.
That's not even in the notes.
No.
You just kind of came up with that one.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways.
So anyway, Real Men of Genius.
Unofficially, we're on our 11th dangling tangent.
Yeah. Real Men of Genius returned last week as we turned the spotlight on Mr. We Lost So It's the End of the World Guy, which was sort of framing the entire episode last week.
Yep.
This week, we debut another new Real Men of Genius feature. This was actually written and recorded last Tuesday.
Wednesday.
And then on Wednesday, the next day, when we were not alive in the studio, Iceman fan Chris Garrison posted on Facebook that he had gotten hurt at the Iceman game last Tuesday night.
Can't make it up.
What happened to him? This is totally legitimate. He said that during the first intermission, they were throwing T-shirts into the crowd. One went over his head, so he turned around and dove for it. But in the process, he banged his knee on the concrete steps, and he didn't even get the shirt because an 8-year-old girl beat him to it. But on the plus side, he reports that his knee is okay after he took some aspirin. So I thought this was just perfect timing. That we could debut this in honor of Chris. Again, this was written and recorded before he posted about this. But it's just too perfect to not roll this one out this week. This is our homage to Mr. No Holds Barred T-Shirt Catcher Guy. Iceman Insights presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. No Holds Barred T-Shirt Catcher Guy.
Mr. No Holds Barred T-Shirt Catcher Guy.
You take no prisoners when a free T-shirt from a team sponsor is flying through the air in your general direction.
Get out! out of my way.
Whether it comes from a t-shirt cannon, or a slingshot, or the furry paws of your beloved mascot, that freebie is leaving the arena in your grubby hands.
Hey, I washed them last week.
Body slam an old lady? Throw a toddler into the next row? Whatever it takes to nab that shirt that's three sizes too small for you.
But it looks really stretchy.
So we salute you, oh capturer of the cotton, because you know that all is fair in love and war, but especially in sporting event giveaways.
Mr. No-Holds-Barred T-Shirt Catcher Guy.
IcemanManiac.com, WIIR, Evansville, Indiana.
You Think has been an outreach to inner city and area youth for over 20 years. Home of a coffee house, a vintage store, radio station, and music venue, You Think has run solely on the donations of supporters. Donation is easy, online, and secure. Visit our website, wiredwiredwired.com. Click to donate and join our You Think family of supporters.
Now, Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And we are back. Shocker. Dirty D. Wired. Psst. Talking a quick look at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yes, the 2014 class was inducted this past Monday. That consisted of Peter Forsberg, Mike Modano, Rob Blake, Dominic Hasek, Coach Pat Burns, and referee Bill McCrary.
And we watched his son yesterday the other week.
Yeah, and that may be the strongest Hall of Fame class in a while. That's a very solid class. So, of course, since that class is in, we can only honor them for 5 minutes, and then we have to turn our eyes toward next season. So, who should be in the 2015 class? There's a bunch of big names eligible. We're just going to rattle them off and see if we disagree on any of these. Eligible names include Nicklas Lidström.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt. Chris Pronger.
Yep.
Sergei Fedorov.
Nope.
You don't think so?
I'm not a Sergei Fedorov fan. Yeah, he has to go in. But
you don't like him. But
I have, in my hockey watching days, I have never seen a player with more talent than Sergei Fedorov. More talent than anyone. More talent than Sidney Crosby, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky. More talented. And no one has ever done less with that
with
much talent.
Such a gift. Yep. Yeah.
He was a kitty cat.
Meow, 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 meow.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he gets in, but I agree with you. I think, yeah, if he had played with the heart.
Rewritten everything.
Yeah, yeah. You take the heart of a Nicklas Lidström and put it in Sergei Fedorov's body, and he would have rewritten the record book. But yeah, 3 Stanley Cups, a Hart Trophy, 2 Selkies, 6-time All-Star. I think he gets in just because of his resume on paper. So we'll move on. Mark Recchi.
Yep.
I agree. That's kind of one of those under-the-radar guys that folks don't always think about as being a top-level elite guy. But, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Jeremy Roenick.
Yep.
You think so?
Yep. Well, and we were kind of talking about it before. They're Canadians. They're all nice. They have a hard time saying no to anybody. So the Hockey Hall of Fame is different than, like, the NFL Hall of Fame. You about need God to make an 11th commandment with your name in it so that you can get in.
Yeah.
That Hockey Hall of Fame has kind of been like, he's a good guy, and he put up, and he scored some goals, and he won a Stanley Cup.
He played the game the right way.
Yeah, he's a good Canadian. Yeah. So yeah, that's just kind of it. And yeah. Jeremy Roenick, he's a good Canadian that is from America. So they'll put him in.
Geography is hard. Yeah, he was just the third American.
Well, if he played the game like a Canadian.
Yeah, that's true, with grit and heart, yes. Right. Yep. Yeah, Roenick was the third American to score 500 goals. And in general, that 500-goal threshold, if you get safely over that, you're probably going to end up in the Hall of Fame. Which brings us to Dave Andreychuk.
Yep.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 640 goals, 14th all-time, and the most among all eligible players who are not in the Hall of Fame. Actually, the rest of the top 30 who are eligible are in. So, yeah, and I think he gets in eventually, just maybe not this year.
And again, it's weird if you compare it to other Hall of Fames like the NFL, then you've got left tackles and centers and wide receivers. Mm-hmm. But you see Dave Andreychuk and you just think, boy, there was very few left wingers like him.
Yeah.
So even though all the forwards do pretty much the exact same thing, but the fact that he played left wing for all those years and played it so consistently, mm-hmm. both ends of the ice, you think great left wingers of all time, and you think Dave Andrechuk, yeah. among others.
And the weird thing is, he was only an All-Star twice. But he was one of those guys, kind of like Mark Recchi, in that he never really got the love that I think he deserved. So I think that affected his All-Star selections, because was when the All-Star was totally voted on by fans. So if you weren't in a big market or Mr. Popular, then you maybe didn't get as many All-Star selections.
Well, and just the All, you want to talk about something made up?
Yeah,
All-Star. Let's talk goals, assists, and Stanley Cups.
Right.
But All-Star games mean nothing.
Agreed. Phil Housley.
You got to go with
it. I think so, too. I think, second among all U.S.-born players, forwards and defense in points with 1,232. To do that from defense, fourth highest-scoring defenseman of all time, regardless
no
of
cups,
nation.
Though. That's the one thing.
The
first you think of Phil Housley and you think, so many teams added him at the trade deadline at the end of his career, thinking he was going to get him over the hump, and he didn't.
Yeah, he ended up with 1,495 games played, which is the most without winning a Stanley
Cup.
That
is just.
But I think he's got to get in.
Yeah, it's an amazing and a horrible stat line all at the same time.
Here's one that should generate discussion: Erik Lindros.
Yep.
You think he's in?
Oh yeah,
I think so too. I think there's a lot of wrangling among the hockey media about whether or not he gets in, but I think he was so good before the concussion started taking him downhill. He was so good, one of the top 2-3 players in the league.
Yep.
You got to put him in.
Made the Philadelphia Flyers what they were. Mm-hmm. They put him on his back and took him all the way to that Stanley
Cup. Lindros, LeClaire, that whole group, yeah. Speaking of the Flyers, Ron Hextall.
Yeah,
this is where they start getting a little murkier.
One
Vezina.
Yeah.
He was the first goalie to score a goal by actually shooting into the net. And I think this is one of those things that Canadians, the Hall of Fame voters look at some of these intangibles. And I think there's a lot to be said for the way Hextall sort of revolutionized the way goaltending is treated as far as the way goalies play the puck. And
I think a loose wire, too, though.
Yeah, he was a little kooky.
Yeah.
I think he still holds the NHL record for most penalty minutes by a goaltender. But I think he ends up getting in.
That one I'm not sure about.
I think it's close. But I think all of the things being equal, because of the impact on the position, he'll end up getting in. Curtis Joseph.
Yes.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I got no problem with Curtis Joseph. He's a good guy. Good Canadian.
Chris Osgood?
Yep.
You think so?
Three cups.
Three. Yeah, that's a lot of cups. Tom Barrasso.
Yep. Two cups.
Two cups. We keep going down. We're going to get the number of cups that you need. Keith Tkachuk.
Wow, that's a tough one.
538 goals, which is 31st all-time, and I think he's 4th or 5th all-time among American-born players.
A stat that I would like, that if I was seriously voting on it, I would like to take his goals and what percentage that was over the league's goals during his playing time.
Yeah.
So add up all the seasons that he played and then put his 538 and come up with, 2.1% or something like that, and then compare him to Rocket Richard and Gordie Howe and Derek Sanderson and all the players of old in their time period, just to kind of, was he above ratio of those in the past?
Right.
Or was he right there? Because this is kind of that, a lot of goals, no cups, not really a lot of deep playoff runs, and you can't blame him for the team, but
do you ever,
I'm
think
not too sure.
You got to look at a guy and say, was he ever a surefire, top 10 player in the league? And I don't think you can say that about him. Great guy. I loved when he was on the Blues, but I don't know that he's a Hall of Famer, and I think if there's doubt, I think that probably means no. I think you've got to be leaning better than 50-50 to put a guy in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And I don't know. And the 538 goals, 500 I don't think is quite the magic number it used to be.
That's what I was getting to with the ratio.
Right. And I think part of the problem with Tkachuk and a lot of these guys of this era is you're getting guys that half of their career was played in the 90s when scoring was insane, and half of their career was played after the lockout of 03-04. When it became the dead puck era. So it's like, how do you stack up their numbers when they sort of played in two different eras. And yeah, how did their numbers change from era to era? And you would have to do a lot more research if you were legitimately voting on this. I agree.
Yep.
Another one that's similar to Kachuk, Pat Verbeek, 522 goals.
Yeah, I put him in.
You think so?
Yep.
He was a very gifted goal scorer.
Yes, he was. And, boy, he could drop the mitts, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good Canadian boy.
Yep.
Drops the mitts. Loves
scores
it.
Scores goals. Yep.
Pierre Turgeon.
Oh, that's another tough one.
515 goals. I saw that on the, because like Puck Daddy did a list of a lot of these guys, and he just kind of put him in the also-ran category. But I was like, I could have sworn he was, you know, one of those borderline top 10 guys for a while. And I looked up his stats, and I couldn't believe he had 515 yep. goals.
Yep, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Paul Kariya.
I'd put him in.
938 points in 938 games. And like Lindros, retired earlier due to concussion yep. issues. But, I think I would put him in, too. Sergei Zubov.
Man, there's another one. This yeah. is the flip side. He's got two cups, but he was an offensive player, but offensive defenseman. But I don't know if his defense would be good enough for me to put him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I did look this up, though. Scott Niedermeyer, who is in the Hall of Fame, and I don't think anybody really questioned that he was yep. a Hall of Famer. Zubov had more points and a pretty comparable plus-minus in less games.
Yeah, but plus-minus isn't all of that.
That's
plus-minus
true.
Plus-minus is a rough yeah. gauge, but Scott Niedermeyer played a lot better defense
yeah.
than Sergei
Zubov. I agree. But Zubov is 20th all-time among defensemen in scoring, which, I don't know. I think he's right on that borderline.
Yep.
I'm at like 51-49. In the absence of others, I'd put him in, but I don't know that I'd put him in over very many people we've mentioned at this point. Some others that are now Hall of Fame eligible, and I don't think you can make a real strong case for any of these. Jason Arnott.
No.
Rod Brind'Amour.
I might make a case for Brind'Amour. Did he ever win a cup?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he did with Carolina. He was on that team in Carolina.
I think I would go with Brind'Amour.
I would. He's close. Theo Fleury.
I'd put him in a heartbeat.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Because of doing so much with so little size.
5'4".
Right.
And he was a guy that would get 40 goals. Again, Pat Verbeek, 40 goals a season at 204 penalty minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would fight anybody.
Yeah,
so.
No matter how big.
Yep.
Bill Guerin.
Nah, I don't know.
I don't think so. Dale Hunter?
I could see him if you rolled in his coaching and what he's done on that OHL team that he and his brother own as kind of like a whole, like, Sportsman of the Year Hall of
yeah.
Fame kind of thing, whatever. I'm sure they have some category for
yeah.
doing good things for hockey kind of thing. I could see him in that way, but not just off of his playing stuff.
Yeah. Marcus Naslund.
Interesting, no cup.
Yeah. Owen Nolan.
Interesting, no cup.
Mike Richter.
Yeah, I would do Richter.
Yeah, he's in the American Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yep. Richter and Barrasso, they won cups. I just think you can kind of tell. If you're a goalie and you win a cup, there's a chance I'm sticking you in
yeah.
there. So Corey Crawford's right on the line there of of getting one in Antti Niemi. So.
Claude Lemieux.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Not. Brian Rafalski.
Yes.
I agree. Mike Vernon.
Yes.
And Doug Waite.
No.
Yeah, I agree. A couple other names I just thought of. There's talking about that issue of off ice and not just looking at NHL playing stats. I've seen some talk about Alexander Mogilny when you take his body of work and yeah. not just what he did in the NHL, but what he did overseas, and Sergei Makarov as well.
Yeah, not on Makarov.
I think Mogilny.
Makarov spent a lot. They're taking a lot of European numbers. Mogilny, they're taking a lot of NHL
right.
numbers and not quite as much. So,
yeah.
And one that I think has got to go in once he retires is Jaromir Jagr.
Absolutely. He's a first
probably,
ballot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brodeur is a first ballot, I think. One other name that I thought was interesting as I saw, you have to consider women as well. And first time eligible this year is longtime American women's player Angela Ruggiero.
Oh,
she is now eligible.
Nice.
And I think if Cammy Granato's in, if Haley Wickenheiser's going to go in, I think Angela Ruggiero has to go in
Definitely.
The Hall of Fame, too. I don't know that she'll get in this year because there's a lot of big-name male players that are going to get serious consideration, but I think eventually she needs to go in, too.
Cool. Upcoming games. tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight's the big one.
Yeah, the schedule really heats up now. It's been a fairly slow start, but the Icemen will play 7 games in the next 11 days, counting
love
today.
It.
Tonight, the 19th against Greenville. It is the first visit this season by the Road Warriors, who are 8-5.
Solid club.
It's a Domino's weeknight. $19 gets you a ticket, a $5 Ford Center food and beverage voucher, and a coupon for a free large one-topping pizza from Domino's. So that's a nice deal. And as mentioned, it is the number retirement ceremony for Josh Beaulieu during the first intermission. And the first 3,000 fans will get a replica banner of the one that will be hanging in the rafters. And as we mentioned last week, make sure you're among the first 3,000 of the 2,500 people that are going to be there.
Yes.
And then moving forward, Friday, the Icemen are at Cincinnati. It's finally our first game of the season against the Cyclones, who are 4-4-2. Interesting promotion they're doing. The first 2,000 fans through the doors in Cincinnati will get a Cyclones oven mitt. For Thanksgiving. That's one of the more outside the box things.
Yeah, I like it. It makes perfect sense once you said Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. Then Saturday, the Icemen move north in Ohio to Toledo. The Walleye will be wearing special jerseys that look like the classic Batman uniform, and the Icemen will be the Riddler. We discussed that last week. You're not a fan?
Not one bit.
I think it's pretty awesome. I think the Walleye jerseys look hideous. That classic gray and blue Batman outfit is awful, but I dig the Riddler ones. They look pretty cool. And then Sunday, back home against Greenville again, the second and final visit by the Road Warriors this season. That is a 5 o'clock start, and it could be an ugly one because it will be the fourth game in 5 days for both teams. While the Icemen are in Cincinnati and Toledo on Friday and Saturday, Greenville is in Toledo and Fort Wayne.
That trip sucks.
Yeah, so it could be a sluggish affair.
Yeah.
It is the first Subway family night of the season, so $19 gets you a ticket, an Iceman Subway t-shirt, a popcorn, and a soda. And it is Paws and Pucks pet adoption night. There will be puppies in the lobby, so get a blindfold for your small children if you don't want to take one home. And the first 1,000 fans get a free dog bowl. Yeah.
Awesome.
Speaking
of thinking outside the box.
Yeah, no kidding.
You go to Cincy, you get an oven mitt. You come to Evansville, you get
a dog bowl, right,
for your Thanksgiving leftovers.
Yeah.
Oh, and we got next week's already because we're not going to be on the air.
Right. Next Wednesday, the Icemen are at Cincinnati. That is the start of the annual Thanksgiving road trip due to the Shrine Circus. And they are doing $1 beer that night, which usually you do that on Thursday and call it Thirsty Thursday. So I think they should call it Wasted Wednesday.
Yeah, and they will be wasted. It is amazing. They build those can pyramids in the corner. They stack them like 17 rows high, and then someone gets checked into them, and I'll knock all the cans over, and the crowd goes crazy. It is an experience. If you have nothing going on Wednesday night, you can get out of work a little bit early. I would highly suggest make the 3.5-hour trip. Go over to Cincy. See it once and then come back home that night or whatever. It is worth it. It is awesome. It is a great time. I was there 2 or 3 times last year for it, and it was fantastic. Made for great radio.
Cool. And then the Icemen are off on Thanksgiving Day, but they'll be on the road heading to Elmira because we take on the Jackals again on Friday the 28th and Saturday the 29th. So Coach Mullins gets a couple more cracks at getting his first win against his former team.
Might as well just chalk those losses up right now.
So we got these 7 games, 2 home games against Greenville, 2 road games against Cincinnati, 2 road games against Elmira, and 1 road game against Toledo.
Oosh.
What do you think is an acceptable number of points? There's 28 total points up for grabs. Or wait, no. 14. Math is hard.
Math is really hard.
14 total points up for grabs. What do you think is an acceptable stretch here?
What do I think is acceptable? I think 2-5 is acceptable. I'm still
really
not that concerned. It's going to take some time to work it all out. We got injury issues and the loss of Patrick Kennedy. It's going to take some time to find some chemistry. So I'd say 2-5 is break-even point. Anything over that
is a bonus. Gotcha. So
there you go. The dangling tangent.
Since Thanksgiving is upon us, simple question. What is your perfect Thanksgiving meal?
Anything with Grandma. Back in the olden days of the Benigni family, we're living in downtown Detroit, but my grandparents had a cottage 3.5 hours north in northern lower Michigan, and the family would descend upon said two-bedroom cottage, and there would be 21 of us in a two-bedroom cottage, and one room was just grandmas and grandpas. And we would just pack that place, all the cousins, aunts and uncles, and everything else. We would have a fantastic Thanksgiving dinner. We watched the Lions, and it was just a fantastic place. All the cousins would go outside and play, and my Uncle Mike and Uncle Mike would play euchre against Grandma and Grandpa.
Really?
From the start Wednesday afternoon until Sunday afternoon when everyone left, they would play 50 cents a game, a quarter a euchre.
Nice.
And that is where I learned how to swear.
That takes me. I have so many fond memories of playing euchre with grandparents.
But that was it. Just, you know, we would, all the food would come out, everything would get put away, and then after everything got cleaned up, right back to the table they'd go and just keep playing. And we still have the stat sheet, so they'd write it out. They would keep score on a piece of paper so they could keep all the. And they would lose $17 at the end of a week, and my two Uncle Mike. So
that's awesome.
Yep, it was fantastic.
So what do you like on the menu? What's your favorite food?
Oh, it does. I'm traditional turkey. Oh, I have another story because it is dangling tangent.
It's a tangent of the tangent.
Turkey stuffing, green bean casserole. I eat everything, just as long as there's plenty of it. Now, last year we played Thanksgiving Day in Gwinnett, mm-hmm. and I was with the Iceman, and Gwinnett is 2 hours from Augusta, Georgia, where my brother and family live. So they came up. I was able to work out a deal that I paid for the hotel room, but it was on. But we got the Iceman discount, and it just worked out that they set us up with two suites right across the hall from each other. Mm-hmm. So my brother and wife and nephews and nieces are in that one, and Rebecca and I and Ivy are in ours. And we did the game. Jake was on the radio with me. That was the night of the Flying Sasquatch.
Yes.
And we were heading over for Thanksgiving dinner, which was going to be Little Caesars. We already spied it out, so we were going to get pizza and then go back. Well, by the time we got out of the game, everything was closed.
Ah.
So we did Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, literally. If you remember the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving cartoon, mm-hmm. we served popcorn and candy and toast. Was in
yummy.
Cooked it all in our hotel room, and it was when you got family.
It's about who you're with, yep. Yeah.
So we had an absolute blast.
I agree. I'm very simple and traditional too. Turkey, mashed potatoes, corn, rolls. With your turkey, do you prefer white or dark?
I prefer dark.
Do you really?
Yep. I like dark meat.
I like
what
the
about
white.
The cranberries?
I'm not a fan. Yeah. I don't like stuffing either.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, but, I can eat bread, more bread, stuffing, and beer. I have no problem with that ever.
What about pie? You like pumpkin pie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
You know who makes a bad pumpkin pie? And by bad, I mean completely awesome. Johnny Kells.
Really?
Yep. Made me one. Rebecca and I won for our anniversary, and it was fantastic. So, yep.
Interesting.
He's right up there with my Grandma Travers, my French-Canadian grandma.
Yeah, I'm with you. You just give me turkey, some sort of bread product. I prefer rolls and pumpkin pie, and I'm happy. Everything
sweet
else
potato.
Is second.
You sweet potato guy?
I don't like, I like sweet potatoes better than I like yams, but I'm not really a fan of either.
I like sweet potatoes. I like sweet potato pie.
So yeah. Well, I actually will get, my parents are coming down from Indy for Thanksgiving weekend. They're going to be here. They're coming down Wednesday.
And you're taking them to the zoo?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. We're going to go see the jaguar on West Franklin. but yeah, they're coming down there. They're coming in Wednesday night, and they're staying at our house and not leaving until Monday morning. So I'm going to be pumping the ibuprofen all weekend long. But the cool thing is my dad is, sometime in the spring, he's going to have back surgery. So he's not sure how well he's going to be getting around. So, this is kind of he's wanting to do a last hurrah. So they're coming down and he's going to take care of making all the food.
Oh, nice.
So he's going to make turkey dinner and everything at the house. So yeah, that's going to be pretty cool, I think.
He is Michael Shockley, the senior writer, webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All the information you need about your beloved Evansville Iceman, IcemanManiacs.com. Final thoughts.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. We're taking next week off, as mentioned. So everyone,
and the plan is Thanksgiving Eve, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve. Those are all on Wednesdays, and we will not have shows on those.
Correct. Otherwise, we'll pretty much be doing shows weekly. Maybe take a week off here or there, but for the most part, it'll be weekly for the rest of the season. Other than those weeks, but yeah, no show next week. So we'll see you on Wednesday, December 3rd. Between now and then, everybody have a safe and blessed holiday, and be safe if you're traveling. Try not to speed or too much or get yourself in any trouble while you're out there.
No drinking and driving.
Correct. Yeah. So, yeah, everybody have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Will we see you on the radio? Wait, have you plugged the...
I already did. And then you started yammering with our 17th dangling tangent.
You plugged Iceman Maniacs, but you didn't plug the radio station again.
You've got to put that as a bullet point.
Seriously, yeah, it's going to have to
You're listening to Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley on 96.9 FM Wired Radio.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.